Pick your friends, pick your nose, but don't pick your friends. Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A podcast widely known for its generosity. And now, he may have inspired a Beatles song, Nowhere Man, Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, it's time for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thanks for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so happy to have you here. It is a beautiful, sunny Arizona morning. It's late in May, and the birds are chirping, and the snakes are probably out looking for unwary hikers. So you people should stay on your toes out there if you're walking around in Arizona this time of year. I just want to say we are in the later stages of the 300 episodes. We're right in the middle stages, actually, and the audience is growing slowly but steadily. So we are very happy. I like that particularly because I know that once people have made their Medicare decisions and they've acted on them, they've called me to help them with their Medicare supplement insurance and their drug plans, they don't really need me anymore, and they can drop off this podcast. So I think what the increase in audience means is that we are gaining more new people. I'm hoping that it's the kind of listenership that's happy to be here, and I hope they find this podcast helpful or at least entertaining. When Randy and I get going, boy, you never know where the free association is going to lead us. But the whole thing here is to help people feel confident about the approaching Medicare transition. A lot of people covered by Obamacare, employer plans, they don't know the details because the government doesn't do a real good job of explaining things like the risks of late enrollment penalties and that sort of thing. And that's where I come in, not just the podcast, but also the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. We've got the 2022 edition out on Amazon and on Barnes and Noble. So you can buy a paperback, you can buy a hardcover. Let's say you want to give a gift to someone. I would suggest the hardcover edition. It's a little more expensive, but it's so much more durable. We also have an Audible book through which you can listen to me read those words to you. And we have an Amazon Kindle or ebook available. I think it's more than just a Kindle. You don't have to have a Kindle. They have that available for other types of electronic reading media. So there are lots of ways to get the book. Once you've read that book, which isn't going to take you all that long, you're going to know a whole lot more about Medicare than you ever wanted to know. But the nice thing is, once you make your plans, once you execute your plans, your encounter with Medicare then sails off into the future with hardly a glitch, hardly a word from me, and just an occasional need to adjust that course just a little tiny bit, not threatening at all. So now what I often do is I ask Randy to play our 30-second radio spot. We concocted this thing a couple of years ago, and it's a succinct way for people to understand how they can tap into the knowledge that we store in our little brain. So I'm going to be quiet now and let Randy do his thing. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate your play in that, and hopefully people are enjoying it. It is it's a way of shoving the message out in a more memorable fashion, I think. But anyway, why don't you join us, Randy? Pot up that mic and tell us how things are going with you.
Well, I am doing pretty good, Doug. I've got to tell you.
I hear that you're on. You and your lovely wife have separated. Is that true? Are the rumors true?
We are going through a grandparents need to go watch the grandkids' separation.
Okay, so no trouble in paradise, then. It's just
no trouble in paradise. Other than, you know, I'm always in trouble at some level.
Well, sure, that's part of being married, I think.
Yeah, I'm. Well, if I'm not in trouble, at some level, that means I'm either sleeping or out of the house.
Well, I'll tell you something. I am in trouble frequently when people ask why we live in Arizona only part of the year instead of all year. And when I give an honest answer, I am severely chastised later on by the person who is responsible for our two-state lifestyle. And so I've got to learn to keep my mouth shut. And that could be part of the beauty of getting along in a marriage, is keeping one's mouth shut at the right times.
Well, I have discussed, somebody told me this years ago, and I've got to tell you, in my earlier years, I wasn't a good listener on this particular topic. They used to tell me the only thing that should pop out of my mouth is, yes, you're right, honey, I'm wrong.
Let me guess as to who might have told you that.
My dad.
Oh, there you go. Well, my dad never said that. What my dad said to me when I announced that I was going to get married. Now, I was 23. I hadn't finished college yet, so I hadn't met the criteria that he expected that one would follow. But when he gave me marital or premarital advice, in this case, it was about some banana boat that leaves New Orleans every day. There's a banana boat that leaves New Orleans. And he said, I could arrange to have you on that banana boat. And then, you know, meaning if you want to duck out of this marriage, you don't have to go through with it just because you feel like you'll disappoint people. I can arrange for it to be less embarrassing if you decide to change your mind at the last minute. So I don't know where the banana boat came from, but the message was clear. But I don't know.
That's a new one on me, the banana boat. That must have been something unique to your father.
I'm guessing. I don't know that he ever took it, because he never met my mother until he had gone through a year and a half of college, several years of World War II, and then came back, finished college, and he met her on a train headed to Norman, Oklahoma, during their last year of college, or his last year of college. So she
was on the other side of the aisle, down in the dining car, maybe, and he was eyeballing her from a distance. And is it one of those movie kind of stories?
Well, I'll tell you, she was riding with her mother. Her mother was escorting her back to school.
Man, that changes the whole topic.
And I didn't even know about that until I was an adult. And so I have no idea how this meeting would have gone. But basically, my grandmother was hell on wheels, and she was large and in charge. So she was not going to let her daughter become too cozy with some stranger until she knew all about him. Now, eventually he passed muster, and he became like their son that they never had. And so they loved him until the days they died. But I'm sure that first meeting might have been a little tense.
Okay.
Well, let's see here. In 1945, after victory in Europe Day, he came back. He was sent back to Oklahoma for a 30-day leave in August in order to prepare for the Japanese home island invasion. He was going to be part of the invasion force. And so while he was home, you know, thinking, oh, God, you know, now we got to go invade Japan. That's going to be a nightmare. The one good thing I'll say about a Democrat president, Truman dropped the two bombs on August 6th and August 9th. And so that was 1945. And he immediately was able to muster out of the Army and enroll in the next semester at OU to finish up his previously started college education. So while he was going to OU, he met my mother. And he was, under the microscope with her parents, because she was an only child. And then in 1946, they got married. So he had just finished school, and she had finished school at the same time. She was actually ahead of him because she had been going to college during the war, whereas he hadn't been able to. So they both finished at the same time because my mother deliberately flunked a couple of classes so that her parents couldn't make her leave school. So I think he was still not proven at that point. And then they got married in 46. My grandfather hired him for his Oklahoma City John Hancock agency. And then we moved to Illinois in, you know what? I'm losing track of the calendar because the Korean War came a calling. He was a friend of the family who was a general in the Oklahoma National Guard, talked my father into joining up. Yeah, one day a weekend and or one weekend a month, yeah. And you get extra pay. Well, that didn't work out too well because they called up the Oklahoma National Guard, which became the 45th Infantry Division. He had become an artillery officer because Fort Sill, you know, everybody in Oklahoma goes to Fort Sill. So he spent a year in Korea until the end of 1951. So I got to figure that he probably had earned his family stripes by 1951. That would be my guess, because in 52, we moved up to Illinois in September of 1952, and he went to work in the new Chicago branch of the family empire. And so that was, I think he earned his, he proved himself to be worthy of being a family member somewhere between 46 and 51, I guess. Well, I'm pretty sure it wasn't. And frankly, the only time I ever heard that man cry was when he called me from Canada to say that my mother's father had died during a John Hancock Company function in Montreal. And they had driven all night from Quebec to Montreal to, attend to him. And it was kind of interesting. My grandfather, who was a world beater, was sitting at a cocktail party surrounded by his old John Hancock friends. He had a drink in one hand because he was never shy about having a cocktail. And he was holding my grandmother's hand in his other hand. And he always fell asleep at inappropriate times. And so he fell asleep and there was something different this time. My grandmother could feel that his hand had relaxed or something. She said, "Oh my God." And he had died right there. So I guess that was poetic justice, I suppose.
If somebody's got
to
do it,
that's one good way to go. I hope
that's the way to go.
Yeah, the only thing is, I think back now to the fact that was a good way to go, but the problem was he was 10 years younger than I am now, so he had a lot of good life left that he should have been able to enjoy, and a lot of productivity. I mean, this guy was a master at finding people, using their skills to help them better themselves and help them earn more money and everything. So he was just beloved by most people. And the good that he spread through the world, it just came to a screeching halt that one day. But anyway, my father took over the business and did very well for himself. So
I didn't know your parents.
Oh, yeah, both of them. Absolutely. My father was a Beta Theta Pi. I would have been a Beta, except when I went through Rush at a different school entirely, there was a guy named Douglas C. Jones, and they had us alphabetical. So this guy was such a weirdo that every house that we went to, most half of the houses that we went to on this campus, there were 13 fraternities, they mistook us. So the guys that were assigned to talk to him wound up talking to me, and the guys that were assigned to talk to me wound up talking to him. And he did not make a good first impression. And so
everybody that for the stand up Jones. Oh, not yeah. You. We got plenty.
which Jones, sir? Oh, Doug Jones. So oh, I was
still we got plenty of Doug Jones next.
So my choices were severely restricted after this guy managed to irritate people at several different fraternity houses, but I wound up in a good fraternity. It just wasn't the Beta Theta Pi that I was hoping to be.
That wasn't the one you were hoping for. Yeah. Well, that's a great story. I love stories. As you can tell, I love stories like that. So I got one more thing to mention.
Alrighty.
We probably ought to get some Medicare business done.
I'm ready to go.
You know, I was watching the internet the other day and, you know, they're talking about, you know, the monkeypox taking over the world.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Well, there's another kind coming out even after that. After they get the monkeypox under control, you know what's coming next?
I'm afraid to ask.
Donkeypox.
Donkeypox is different than monkeypox?
Yes. Think about it a minute. Donkeypox.
Okay. I'm losing.
Left wing donkey.
Oh, there you go. Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Well, when that hits, obviously the mask wearing will resume The closing of private businesses will resume the removal of our freedoms. We won't have the freedom to decide whether that, you know, we can put up with it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's,
it's interesting because the left wing donkeypox is the worst kind there is.
Yeah. If there's ever an elephant pox, no, that's not going to be possible because we value freedom way too much. Oh my God. I'm looking at my little clock here that I put up on the microphone. We've already been jawjacking for 15 minutes. Is that actually possible?
No, we've got a little more time, but we probably better get some Medicare business done. So I see by our podcast document here, the episode notes, that we are going to talk. Well, you're going to talk. I don't know a damn thing about this.
Yeah, and you shouldn't muddle your pretty little head with this subject because it's not really. Yeah, I talked about this maybe a year ago. I can't tell you exactly what date or what episode number it was, but Washington State instituted a long-term care plan to cover all of its people. And the thing I didn't like about it was compulsory. So if you are an employed person in Washington State and you don't have your own long-term care insurance policy, then the state of Washington was going to extract additional money from your paycheck and theoretically stick it away for your later use for long-term care. Now, long-term care could be a nursing home, which is pretty darn expensive, and that scares everybody, or it could be care in your own home with like a caretaker coming in, or it could be modifications to your home, like a wheelchair ramp or modifications to your bathroom or something to make it more safe. But the thing I hate about this kind of a program is it's a state-run program, which means it's going to be inefficient, and B, it is compulsory, and I don't like the government doing things that are compulsory. I don't mind compulsory military service. We need to be protected from foreign threats, but I don't like it when a state government decides to make everybody participate in an insurance program. And ironically, they were going to fire this thing up. And all of a sudden the headline on this article is Washington State retools the first in the nation long-term care benefit. Sounds like they might have made a mistake or they might have gone off half-cocked. So this is from the Kaiser Health News in April of 2022. So it's not very old. It's about a month old. And it involves Patricia Keys. She is age 71 and she's a stroke survivor. Now she needs help with many everyday activities such as dressing and bathing. And her daughter, Christina, who lives near her mother in Vancouver, Washington, cares for her in the evenings and pays about $3,000 a month for help from other caregivers. Christina, the daughter, was thrilled 3 years ago when Washington State passed a first-in-the-nation law that created a long-term care benefit for residents who paid into a state fund. They don't mention here that it was compulsory. She hoped it would be a resource for others facing similar challenges. I'm sure she was concerned about others facing those challenges. I think she was really looking for a benefit to help her out with the care of her mother. And that's certainly understandable. She was kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. You don't want to send your parents off to the county farm. You want them to stay in their home where they would like to be. But in this case, it was costing about $3,000 a month to provide the care for her mother that she thought she deserved. So the benefit, which has a lifetime benefit of or a lifetime limit of $36,500, would have made a big difference during the first year after her mother's stroke, Keyes said. Her mother needed a ramp built and other modifications made to her house, as well as a wheelchair and hospital bed. The extra money might also have made it easier for the daughter to hire caregivers. Instead, she gave up her technology sales job in order to look after her mother. People are under this cloud of delusion that between your insurance and your retirement income, you're going to be fine, she said. They don't understand all the things that insurance does not cover. But relief for Washington families will have to wait. And they call this program the Washington Cares Fund. So the Washington Cares Fund, which was set to begin collecting money for the program with a mandatory payroll tax on workers in January of 2022, this has been delayed while lawmakers make adjustments to the current legislative or during the current legislative session, payroll deductions will start now in July of 2023. So that's a year and a half later than they predicted, and benefits will become available in July of 2026. So it's going to be another 4 years before anybody in Washington is going to see any benefit from this compulsory program. Other states are watching Washington closely as they weigh offering coverage for their own residents. They don't mention the compulsory aspect of it. In California, a task force is examining how to design and implement a long-term care program. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, Illinois and Michigan are also studying the issue, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Supporters of the Washington program say it needed fine-tuning, and they note that social programs like Medicare and the Affordable Care Act also underwent tweaking. The program's long-term solvency, however, is in doubt, and the cost to workers who buy into the program is in question. What's not in doubt is that it's critically important to address long-term care needs. Something like 70% of the people who turn 65 will require some type of long-term care services. Many will need help, such as an at-home assist, while others could face a stay in a nursing home, which on the average costs more than $90,000 a year. But many don't have good options to cover the expenses. Medicare's coverage is very limited, while Medicaid generally requires people to impoverish themselves before it picks up the tab. Private long-term care insurance policies are unaffordable for most people. The upshot is many people rely on unpaid family members to help them with medical care as well as everyday activities like bathing and dressing. The problem is getting much worse, according to this article. The number of people 85 and older is projected to more than double within the next 20 years. While the number of Americans living with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias is expected to double as well to 13 million. The Federal Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Act, that's called CLASS, the CLASS Act, very classy. That was part of the Affordable Care Act. It created a voluntary long-term care buy-in program, but it was never implemented because of concerns that it wouldn't be financially sound. Since then, policymakers in Washington, D.C. have had little appetite for addressing the problem. We don't have a solution at the federal level, so states are taking it on themselves to experiment with solutions. This is from a consultant for the California Health Advocates. Let's see here. The Washington state program's maximum benefit is intended to cover a year's worth of home care at 20 hours a week. Although wealthy people can likely afford to pay for their care, and the poorest families qualify for Medicaid, middle-class families might burn through their savings trying to cover such bills. It doesn't solve all the problems, but with a modest premium and a modest benefit, it eases the problem for families. It could also give some families time so they maybe can develop a plan for long-term care after their benefits expire. Although the law passed in 2019, it remained below many people's radars until the mandatory payroll deduction approached. Workers faced a tax of 58 cents per $100 of income, 50.58%, so a half of a percent. For someone earning $52,000 annually, the deduction would equal $302 a year. According to state estimates, as people realized they were about to have to start paying into the program, some pushed back. Workers could get an exemption if they had a private long-term care insurance policy, and thousands of people scrambled for that coverage before November 1st, 2021. That was the opt-out deadline. Many of the state's employers quickly offered workers the opportunity to buy private plans. Because withholding for the benefit isn't capped on income, wealthier people may be better off with private long-term care insurance if they can pass the insurer's medical evaluation. I think as part of my podcast episode discussing this, I talked about the problem with people getting individual policies. The underwriters are so afraid of the long-term liability that a person buying long-term care insurance faces. The company is very, very exacting in their underwriting standards, and many people that can get life insurance all day long, even disability insurance, many of those people cannot qualify for long-term care insurance from a private insurance carrier. Anyway, this person is quoted as saying, we did have a good number of higher earning younger folks who wanted to buy a policy, said a certified financial planner in Gig Harbor, Washington. By last month, 473,000 workers had taken the one-time offer to opt out of the program. Other people raised objections because they would have to pay into the system but wouldn't benefit. These included people who work in Washington but live in a neighboring state, the spouses of service members who are unlikely to make Washington a permanent home, people planning to retire before the 3 years needed to qualify for benefits, and some workers on temporary visas. The commission overseeing the long-term care program has estimated that the number of people from these groups eligible to opt out is about 264,000. So in January, the governor of Washington addressed many of these issues. He said he signed legislation that addresses these issues. It allows certain groups to opt out and people nearing retirement to receive partial benefits based on the number of years they paid into the program. One other group, those who plan to retire elsewhere, had not been addressed, but the state is developing recommendations for the legislature. So apparently there are a lot of tweaks that have to be made to make this thing more palatable to more people. Some critics are concerned that allowing more people to opt out of the program puts it on increasingly precarious financial footing. The solvency issue just gets greater and greater. That was a guy who was a partner at a law firm in Seattle, who is representing employers and workers in a class action lawsuit that claims the law violates federal and state statutes governing employee benefit plans. Any changes that they make further increases the cost. Supporters are sponsoring a ballot initiative that they believe would help bolster the program's assets by allowing program funds to be invested in a diversified portfolio rather than fixed income investments. This, as an aside, as we know, fixed income investments are almost at zero earnings right now. Even long-term mortgages are, you know, the interest rate being charged for a mortgage, very, very small compared to historical interest rates. So I don't think investing the program's funds in their fixed income investments is going to make the program's assets grow very quickly at all. So let's see. Although the program is delay isn't ideal for the thousands of people who could benefit from the new program in the short term, consumer advocates are taking it in stride. We know that as the first state to do this, it may not be perfect getting out of the gate. But what represents, let's see, this that's a spokesman for a coalition of Washingtonians for a responsible future. It may have to be fixed, but we'll fix the problems going forward. Yeah. Okay. You heard my editorial comments earlier, Randy. Basically, I'm not happy about a government program that extracts money from participants that may never, ever get a benefit from it.
Well, yeah. I mean, just, you know, listening carefully to the details of your discussion there, they're already charging the basically the residents for it, right?
Yep. They're going to charge them unless they have a good reason to opt out.
Okay, so anyway, they're making them pay for something that you already said isn't going to be producing any, you know, benefit for some people till what, 2026?
That's right. Boy, you do listen carefully. I'm proud of you.
Holy bananas, people. Hey, you know, I'm going to go down to the local car dealer.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say, you know, I know that you have a car. I'm going to start paying. I want this car today, okay?
Give me the right, car today. Right.
But I'm not going to pay for it until 2026, which is exactly the opposite situation. But come on.
That's the way government people think. You know, frankly, it's going to become worse. When these programs start, they never, ever go away, too. So, frankly, this will be burdening Washington taxpayers that don't have any reason to buy insurance for this purpose far into the future.
Oh, dear Doug.
Well, we're hopefully going to elect people that will not institute this sort of a forced compulsory contribution program in the future. I think it should be up to others to decide for themselves whether they need this kind of coverage. And frankly, a voluntary program would be a lot more palatable to me. If the state wants to do it, let's make it voluntary.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Well, you know, we need to bring the train into the station.
Already, I'm happy to do that.
We are out of gas, and we are out of fuel, and reasonably out of food. You know, we're running a passenger train,
so we're going to be out of here before you know it.
The passengers are getting owly because they haven't had their lunch. So, let's go ahead and thank the people. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you every time you come. But in the meantime, I would like you to send some mail to Doug at DBJ. At mlmmailbag.com. It makes his day every morning when he goes down to the mailbox and sees something from you folks. Go out and buy yourself a paperback, the Medicare for the Lazy Man book, 2022, the green version, green numbers.
Yeah.
Get yourself an audio, get yourself a Kindle, and just get any, you know, get a combination. I think that's a good thing, because sometimes, you know, all of your friends and relatives may not want the same thing for Christmas. You could give them each, you know, one of their particular choice.
It's going to be hard to hand them the electrons that make up a Kindle edition of the book, but, you know, persistence pays off in these cases.
So. That's right. That's right. So thank you all for joining us. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones from his fortress of solitude up in the mountains, high in the mountains of Cave Creek, Arizona. He was originally from Oklahoma, but not now. Insurance expert, Doug Jones.
Bye-bye.